recording now. So it doesn't matter if we pick up an extra conversation or not.
Hmm. You can pick it out, sir?
Yeah, I can. I'll edit it out. I'll probably, when I get ready to do the jukebox with the audio eventually, I'll have each story in its own little link.
I see.
So that about each plane we'll talk about each story.
Well, this one now, that was taken around probably 1970, 71. As PA-12, the gear broke. It was over at Metro Field where I was teaching the A&P school. And that's all the students out there learning how to pick up an airplane and put the landing gear back on. A little simple deal. It was a good place to work, runway and all. Things were going on all the time.
Was it actually a plane that had
had
a problem?
The guy came in, landed, and the gear let go, yeah. Oh, yeah, beat up old junker.
And this was over at Phillips Field or
no,
Metro?
No, Metro.
Let me know when you want me to switch pictures and all.
Switch.
I think this is mostly these ones. These slides were real faded.
Oh, yeah, that's all the same one.
Mm-hmm. Terry was one of your students at some point.
Yeah. And he left, and I, about that time, then later on I left. Terry came back and finished up, though, and got his licenses later on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, you can see the broken gear there.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all there was to it.
Some of these slides are still backwards. I haven't gotten around to flipping them yet. These ones aren't.
Yeah, they should be all right. Yeah.
But I can flip them when I need to.
Oh, goodness. There's the tent we lived in when we were getting the C-46 off the hillside. It had bellied in, ran out of gas.
Do you know about what year that was?
Let's see. It was after I left Weems. It probably would have been about winter 67, 68, somewhere in there.
And you said that was in the hills above Livengood?
Yeah, just outside of Livengood. Don't remember the name of the mountain. It's the tallest one around. Sawtooth, maybe? I don't know. I don't remember now. Don't know if anybody ever told me.
Was the plane up there in support of a mine?
Or? No. They'd Fairbanks Air Service. Had a load of drum gas and fuel oil to go to Anaktuvik, and they got up there, and they couldn't find Anaktuvik, couldn't get in. So the captain elected to come back to Fairbanks, but he didn't have enough gas to make it. Landed on it's a clear tundra hilltop, way up, no trees or anything. So he slid her in.
Was he on skis?
No, C-46.
C-46, okay.
Yeah, wheel-up landing. Worst part about it was digging all the impacted snow out of the belly and nose compartments. Get all the weight out of it.
Go ahead and keep talking, Jim. I just got to look at one thing on the record.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's me and Arnie Lake and Bob Hillard. Got up there and we're going to do this job. Took up, that's airbags that would fit under the wings, big ones, about 12 foot square. Lift it up and go from there. There, I think we were just getting up there. We kind of camped one night for some reason. I think that's still on the road. Had a loader. Loader and a cat, yeah. To make a runway to get the damn thing to get off again. That's on the road out of Lyman. It's probably on the Elliott Highway.
There was just the three of you?
Yeah. And one fellow kept running back and forth. Herb, something, he was working at Fairbanks Air Service. We'd get a message through and he'd call, come up and bring up stuff for us if we needed it.
Were you working for yourself then, or?
Oh, I was kind of loose ends. I was working for Fairbanks Air Service at the time and trying to work on my house. I was due to go back out and pick up Judy so we could get married, get settled down. And just got in between it. Let's see, who was it? Urban Ray Hoy? No, not Urban. Phil Ray Hoy and Jack Winters. They were running they had the cat and the loader. Bob Hillard, see, the first night we were up there, we were doing something, and he turned around and hit a propeller blade and broke his nose, so he left, went back to town. So Arnie and I did the job by ourselves. Took about 6 days.
Is Philip Rahoy related to Urban?
Yeah, he's Urban's brother. Been gone for years now, so same with Jack.
Were they both working for the air service?
No. They just hired on to run the tractors and stuff, kind of a contract deal, I guess. I don't know how that worked out. And there's the 46. As you can see, we're up pretty high.
Is that a lake behind there?
No, that's another hillside. There was a swale below it. They came in and landed going uphill. Yeah, one day the fellow was flying a DC-3, went by, and he was actually below us, looking up the cockpit window at us. Yeah, pretty good job. Weather turned good.
And he had his gear up when he landed?
Just
belly in? Belly, he'd tear his gear off.
No, he couldn't do it. He'd dump it on his nose, bellied in. Yeah, there you can see the heaters going, trying to get things squared away.
It's surprising to someone like me who hasn't been up. There's one from the...
Oh, yeah.
What's surprising to someone like me after seeing something like this is that you could get that plane up and out of there in 6 days.
No, it wasn't too bad. And there we're heating up and getting the snow and ice out of the engines and out of the cockpit. Working on something else at the same time, I expect. I had to change the props, of course. Yeah, it's the same thing. Melting the ice out of the engines.
I was surprised to realize that you utilized airbag technology.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. Yeah. How long has that been?
Oh, that's been around for ages. Mm-hmm. These were surplus things. They were... Wien Airlines had them. And I had used them once before at Wien's to pick one up that a gear collapsed right out in front of the terminal. But that was just one side. That wasn't too bad. So we got them and took them up there and used them for this. I used them once after that for an interior airway that forgot to put the wheels down at International. And I don't know whatever happened to them after that.
You still have some sort of airbags?
Not now, no. The small airplanes, you don't need them. Mm. There you can see it. See, it's about, it must have been about 10-foot cube.
Is that you standing behind the camera?
No, that's Jack Winters.
Jack Winters.
Good guy, good operator. But you see, the hill was steep enough. You can see the cable going up to the prop shaft, where it had a screw-on eye on it. And that was to keep the plane from sliding back down the hill. You had to watch out for that. Of course, we tried it once and realized what was going on. And then we're trying it this time. Things are going pretty good, but the tail kept coming up, so we had to put some... We'd emptied it out, of course, to get it light. Then we had to put some drums, full drums, way in the back end, the cargo area, to keep the tail down. It was interesting.
How did you get the drums of fuel up into the plane?
Put a plank down and roll them up.
Just roll them up the old-fashioned way.
Oh, yeah. Well, the dorsal was pretty close to the ground. It was on its belly yet. Mm. We'd start it up and realize this ain't going to work, so we put it back down. Doesn't take much pressure. I suppose 10, 12 pounds is all it takes with that much area. Yes. Yeah, that's me there.
Yeah.
Then you can see it was pretty warm up there at that time. Well, we're lucky with the weather.
What time of year was it?
In the spring, I think about March, somewhere in there. It was pretty dry on Fairbanks. So, yeah, that'd be about right.
You don't notice it just from the photographs on that hillside being that steep that you'd have to anchor it to keep it from sliding.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't tell from here. That's Arnie Lake. We walked, we left the road and went across country just a little bit because it was shorter while we had to get over to it. We walked up over this little ridge and there that airplane lay all snow blown and drifting and the wind is howling. And Arnie looked up at me and he says, "Jim, we have made a mistake." Then we went to work. Yeah, it was real good. He was a good mechanic.
He was an aircraft mechanic?
Oh, yeah. Good sheet metal man. Good at everything. around a long time.
Did he have his own shop? Or?
No, no. He'd worked for different people all around Wayne's. See, I first met him at, I guess it was at Wayne's. We just got along good. Had a few beers together.
That plane looks pretty frosty.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, that first view of it, it was really tough. You see, the cockpit door was open and the snow had blown in it. The wind blew pretty steady. And then we got lucky that it kind of stopped. First couple of days, it was miserable.
Did you have any issues with the snow melting and affecting the electronics inside the cockpit?
Nah, this was the old type gauges and everything, and we weren't worried about radios or anything else. Mm-hmm. And actually, they worked. So it came out pretty fine.
Who flew it out?
Don Gilbertson, the captain. He came up. The owner of the company, Verda Evans, she sent word up that King Williams, the guy that had wrecked it, was going to come up and fly it off. And I told her she wasn't going to do that. We better get Don. He was a lot better. Knew more about it. I just didn't trust that other guy. I mean, he'd already screwed up this much, so I wasn't about to let him take a short runway downhill. Who knows what might happen. That was referred to as our propeller shop.
Is the dirt and snow piled up there, is that just from digging the plane out, or is that from making the runway?
Making the runway, yeah.
Did you repair the propellers that...
No, we brought up different propellers. Mm-hmm. I think we took these apart when we brought them back, just to, they wouldn't be hanging over the edge of the truck. Their things are what, they're about 10 foot or so. No big problem while things are heating up to do this. Oh, yes, the well-dressed mechanic. Filthy Carhartts.
Can't even tell those are Carhartts. They look like dirty shop coveralls.
No, they're Carhartts. There's Arnie fooling around.
What was Arnie's last name?
Lake. Arnie Lake. Now that, it's hard to see, but that was a gull wing I was in when it crashed off the end of Phillips Field.
This wasn't the one that when you're going to Tenaya Lake, was it?
Yes.
Okay.
And Glenn Gregory's airplane, and Glenn and I were going to go down and get this cub that had fallen through the ice at Tenaya Lake and frozen in. And the old gull wing just didn't quite make it.
There's a few better pictures of it.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these slides were scanned backwards, I believe. And this was off the end of Phillips Field, right?
Off the end of Phillips, yeah.
When I was here, when we were just looking at these pictures briefly with Terry the other day, you said something about it was picked pretty clean.
Yeah, we never went back over and got anything off of it. And must have been several months later in summer, somebody said something about a tail wheel. I said, gee, maybe there's one on the gull wing yet. You know, I had an awful time finding it. I'm standing right there, and I knew it was right within 20 feet, and I couldn't see it until a bit of fabric fluttered in the wind, and then I went right over to it. I wasn't 20 feet from it. But they'd taken the engine off, and scavengers had been in there and taken all anything that they thought might be good had taken them off.
This was about 1952?
No, let's see. Just before I went off to Northrop, so it would have been 1955. Paul of 55.
Yeah, we have some of those Tenaya Lake pictures a little later here.
Oh, yeah.
Who was the pilot on this?
Glenn Gregory. It was his airplane. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they went to take off, and they had the big old wooden skis with the metal bottoms on them. And there wasn't much snow on the runway, and some rocks hit it, and they ripped the tin on the bottom of the skis. And we just used up too much runway before we got airborne. I think we went over the end of Phillips Field heading towards the railroad yards at about 2 foot. And down in the gravel pit and up the other end, and we might have had 10, 12 feet when he started hitting the trees. And Glenn just shoved her over and let her shut it off and let her hit. Strong airplanes. Stinson always had a theory of safety first, performance was second. and I'm glad they did.
Was everybody in the plane working for an outfit that was going to recover that plane?
Yeah, we were all working for Fairbanks Aircraft, it was at the time. Later became Bachner's Aircraft.
Okay. Tore up pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Frozen trees don't give too easily.
Yeah. So is this somewhere where the Johansson Expressway is now?
No. It would be, the coke plant was over there for a while. It was just about there.
Mm-hmm.
And before you get to the railroad, let's see. We were in trees between the railroad yards and the China.
Okay.
All changed now, of course, all grown up, not a tree left.
You said Coke plant, just the Coke distributor?
Coca-Cola actually had a plant here for years.
They actually made Coke?
Yeah.
Okay. Same shots. You said that was a Stinson?
Yeah, a Stinson Gullwing. Oh, yeah.
You can see I got that slide backwards on the numbers on the wing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And this one's backwards.
Yeah, it was a Comanche. Belonged to Cliff Fairchild. Flew out of Fort Yukon. That's on Big Middle Lake. And the engine quit completely. He and the other guy with him, they turned and flew and bellied it in. Didn't hardly hurt the airplane. But we had to, the way this weather was and the ice, we had to take it apart to bring it in with a helicopter. And in those days, the helicopters weren't too large. And they had to drop the wings because they started swinging around underneath him. Prior to that, there wasn't much wrong. Belly work.
Was the ice just too rotten to try to fix it there?
Well, at first we thought we'd see if we couldn't put the new engine on and kind of make a bit of a runway. But that was before you had any snow, small snow blowers, anything else like that. So we just couldn't do it.
What year was this?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. See, that's after I came back. So that would have been... See, I went to Northrop all of 56 and part of 57. Yeah, probably spring of 57 or 58, somewhere in there.
When you said you went to Northrop, was that for your AMP training?
Yeah, Northrop Aeronautical Institute, Inglewood, California. I figured I could get everybody. So you can get your ticket right here, just study up, take the test and everything. You got experience. I says, there ain't no way I'm going out and go to school and get this over with. Good move on my part. And the first time I'd been outside. Well, the second. I stayed outside with my grandparents at Vashon Island when I was about, probably 10 years old, I guess.
Where was the training at?
Inglewood, California. And there I was, poor hick from Alaska, and cars going every which way, and the next thing you know, there I was right in the middle of them, carrying on. Oh, yes.
And you went out there in 50...
Went, let's see, late 55, probably around Christmas time. Yeah, school started in January. And I was there a couple weeks before that got going. Yeah.
Had you been working with aircraft prior to going out there?
Yeah, since 1954. I was over washing parts the day I graduated from high school. And then kind of started doing a few things more and decided I really like this. So I worked for, 54 to late 55, year and a half or so, and then went out to school.
Who did you start out working for?
Fairbanks Aircraft.
Was that later Bachner?
Yeah, later's Bachner. Yeah, that was all over Phillips Field.
I need to listen to those tapes of Jim Hutchison and Jess Bachner and get my history down.
There you go. Sure. Yeah, that's well. I guess the engine had been brought in and repaired, and we were thinking about putting it back on when we realized it wasn't going to work. You can see from the hole there, the water was starting to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Snow was melting.
Was this, he flying from Fort Yukon when the injury?
No, he had something else was going on. It was Cliff and a guy named Hal Bogenreif, Bogey. He was another old-time pilot up here. And his airplane had trouble over near Indian Mountain somewhere, so Cliff went over and picked him up in this one, and they were coming back into town when the engine stopped completely. And he turned and bellied it in.
The guy whose plane quit originally must have been really impressed with two things happening right
two
away.
Two real professional pilots. He says, I couldn't believe it, twice in about 3 days. Well, the one in Indian Mountain, that wasn't anything too serious. Change a cylinder or some damn thing. I don't know what happened there.
Where's Indian Mountain?
Over by Hughes.
Okay. So that wasn't damaged. That was just, you guys had to take it apart.
We had to take it apart to bring it in with the helicopter, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it just not accessible with a truck?
Oh, goodness, no. There's no roads down to there.
Mm-hmm. So you basically had to, when you came to a job like this, a lot of times you had to hike in.
Well, not too bad. Usually you could land pretty close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't bad that way at all.
So you flew into this one?
Yeah, coming with 180 on skis.
Mm-hmm.
Unloaded everything, took it apart.
And this was spring again?
Oh, yeah, you can see with the way the snow was melting on the ice there.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty spongy. That's the helicopter bringing the fuselage in to Phillips Field. An old bell.
One of these photos is pretty goofy. I pulled the slide cover before it was done. That's the one.
Hmm.
But I got it again later.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah, colors sure funny there, aren't they?
Yeah, that's from, it was still scanning and I pulled the cover up.
Oh.
So I didn't know it wasn't done scanning.
Oh. Okay. Ah, yes, Tanata Lake.
And you said this is down by Gakona?
We flew in from Gakona.
Mm-hmm.
Half hour or so. Super Cub. People had Conkles, Bud Conkle and his wife. They had a lodge there. I was working this time. I'd driven a truck to Big Delta, picked up a fellow named Art Smith. And we drove on down to Kokona, stayed there overnight, and Cleo McMahon flew us in one at a time in the Cub. Yeah, that ice. Cleo came back in, and he landed way down there, and he went by us standing on the ski, dragging one foot and smiling and waving. Engine shut off, just sliding and sliding.
And this was what year? You said this was November, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm trying to think when that might have been. You know, I had P-55 also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was before I went out to school. Oh, yeah, pretty country. That was the wood hauler, me pulling it. We put a couple of, knocked the ends out of a couple 50-gallon drums, and put them on a fire and commenced to heat up hot water to pour into the holes we cut in the wings to thaw them out. And there it is, going home.
There are
some. You got this out of context, you see, that should have been at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Of all of them.
There we go.
But that's when we first got there.
Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, huh? That's Art there doing something.
You said that was a Cub?
Yeah, Super Cub. He landed actually further out, and he came to a stop, and it fell through. So he got himself and his friend out of it. And then, Glenn went down first, and he cut a circle around the airplane in the ice with a chainsaw and pushed the chunks underneath. Then they cut a path back, and were towing it towards shore. Well, they got stopped when the gear hit the bottom. You couldn't do anything else. It was too heavy with ice and stuff in the wings to, you know, to come up to try and pull it any further. And so Glenn came back to town, and that's when we wrecked the gull wing. I ended up going down with the truck.
Would the wings have held if he would have pulled it up with them full of ice?
I doubt it. I doubt it. There was 6 or 8 inches of ice, probably more. And you can see from the way the wings are that the whole front end was plumb full of ice. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the cockpit and back aft, the fuselage, everything. And trying to get the fire pot going, doing something. I don't know what was going on there.
Had you dealt with planes that had gone through the ice before?
No, it's the first time.
I mean,
Art had done it before. He'd been around here for years.
I can just imagine what went through your mind when you first saw that.
I thought, how the hell do we do anything here? But kept my mouth shut and just kept working.
Now, was the tripod to lift the plane up or to pull it back?
That was for pulling it back originally. Mm-hmm. And Bud and his wife came over. It was good because we stayed in the lodge. Mrs. Conkle was cooking up good food for us. It was a nice, warm place to sleep. And Art was telling a story about blackfish. They're little fish, maybe a couple inches long, but they'll school up in the winter and keep circulating the water so that the ice, they have an open hole above them. And Art was telling this story, and all of a sudden he says, Bud, have you got an outboard around here, a small one? So the next thing, we took this outboard out there, stuck it on the back end of the boat, and cut a hole in the ice, and put it down through and started stirring the water up, and it just melted out around the airplane. But the way the wings were, we had a problem there with the ice inside. So we cut holes in the fabric on top of the wing and just started commencing to carry buckets of water out to pour into them. And it was much more efficient than using the fire pot to heat up the water.
You mentioned before that you had to drill out all the...
Oh, after it came up out, so there's the outboard running there. See, it's underneath that canvas on the back of the boat.
Okay.
And Art is carrying buckets of hot water, or cold water, heading for the beach. he's running back to get more. And the weather was warm enough with it covered up. See, and the water was open a bit. It didn't freeze hardly at all at night. Mm-hmm. I think the coldest we saw it when we first got there was about 30 below, and then it warmed up. Here again, lucky with weather.
You had to have spent some time getting wet during this one.
Oh, yeah. And splashed water around, carrying on. But it wasn't too bad.
You didn't actually have to go under the ice to...
No, sir.
Anything.
I had a little problem hooking up we put a tripod down to the bottom. Or was it on the ice? I forget which. And then hooked onto the engine when we got things thawed out enough and commenced to lift her up. And things got a little wet then.
Jim, anytime you need to take a break, just say the word. We can just press pause on the recording.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go a little further here before we have to run to the bathroom again.
There's how to sequence the...
Yep, wrong airplane.
Minnow Lake airplane.
I think that's Art again. I was taking the pictures, yeah. Got full buckets. He's heading for the airplane.
This picture here, is this looking south or north? Or
I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't. The lodge, I think, would have been over to the right a little bit, but mm-hmm. I'm not real sure of that either. Nice place, all log, beautiful done.
You know if it's still there?
Oh, I expect it is, yeah. Mrs. Conkle's still alive. She could tell you about it.
Mm-hmm. And this is east of Gakona?
I don't know.
I'll have to just look it up on my...
Oh, yeah. It's on the map.
What a sight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's kind of an imperative...
Oh, yeah. We spudded through the ice and put them and let the ice support, so we just used two legs of a tripod instead of three. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There had to be some pressure to get this job done, too, because it was just going to get colder.
Oh, yeah. It's going to get colder and worser. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Is this someone on top of the...
Yeah, I think that's probably Art pouring water in or doing something.
Was Art the one who needed two boxes of cigars?
He did. We landed. or he came in, see, I came in first, then Art came in, and he's standing there looking at that, and he turned to Cleo McMahon, and he says, Cleo, this is a two-box job. I need another box of cigars to finish this one. Barrage is coming up. And then we got some extra rigging on it now for some reason. Another set of poles there.
This may sound like an ignorant question, but were there chainsaws at the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Chainsaws, yeah. Not much else, though.
No electric drills, no.
No, generators. It was all. Oh, but yeah, you could get generators.
Portable ones?
Yeah, but we didn't have one. So what we did was. Yeah, we didn't have a generator. We used hand drills. Art crawled all through that fuselage, drilled holes in the tubing to drain the water out. Years later, when it was recovered, he said they only found one split tube that he'd missed when the water had been in it and frozen. Yeah, same picture there. We got her back up on. Now we're underneath all of that blanketing and tarping and stuff is fire pots and a drip oil stove. Warming it up and getting more ice out of it.
They really must not have had parachutes at the time to create a...
Not down there, we didn't have them. No. We had tarps and quilts from the... Well, there's the lodge in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Getting everything thawed out. Drain the engine oil. Now, that's the old-style engine cover. Went over the engine all the way to the ground so you could put a fire pot right on the ground underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep the wind off of it. Some guy sit under there with a little bitty wood fire, get them warmed up when they were somewhere things were going right. You don't see them anymore. Now it's all electricity and super insulated. That was just white canvas.
Mm-hmm.
You get the shutter off for a minute.
Okay.
Oh. Just like the good old days.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're back recording.
Yeah. Quite a little adventure. It must have been about, 19 at the time?
Oh, at Tanata Lake?
Uh-huh.
After you saw that, were you sure that you wanted to keep on being an airplane mechanic?
I just wanted to learn how to do things. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to keep doing it, yeah.
And you said that on that one tape, that your dad gave you the choice of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The morning after I'd graduated from high school, I was already been working part-time over at Fairbanks Aircraft after school on weekend on Saturdays. And I kind of thought this was going to be fun, so my dad gave me the option. He says, well, now, he says, if you're going to go to college, room and board will be free. If you're going to keep on working, it's going to be $100 a month. Of course, that was 1954, and I sat there for a minute and said, I think I'll just work for a while and see what I want to do. So instead of going to college, I went out to Northrop. It's been a good time. I've enjoyed it all these years.
How much was it to go out to Northrop?
Oh, gosh. Seems like, I think the tuition was $1,000. And I had saved every nickel I could. I had about $2,500 when I went out there. I figured I was a rich kid. Room and board at this place was $17.50 a week. But you had to find your own grub on Sundays.
Was it right in town?
Oh, in Englewood? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't a problem to go down to a cafe or something?
Oh, no. Yeah, $17.50 a week. That was probably when we were flying in. That'd be about right.
Is that snowshoes or?
Yeah, snowshoes out on the wing strut. Yeah, mm-hmm. Common thing.
Was that just a survival gear?
Oh yeah, kind of yeah. That and tromping down runways if you got stuck in deep snow. Yeah, I think that's the lake there. It might be. There were several lakes on the way in. In fact, on one of them, we're going along, peaceful and quiet. Now, you have to remember, only a week before this, I'd been in a crash at Phillips. All of a sudden, Cleo chops the throttle, that airplane started diving, and I thought, oh, not again. And I'm waiting for something to happen, and all of a sudden, the power comes back on, and he circled tight, and it was a wolf down in the lake. He says, I'll have to bring the shotgun next time. It was still legal to shoot him from the air then. He was good at it. Pretty high country.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty barren country.
Oh, yeah, there ain't much there. But then, Bud was running a lodge, hunters taking him out, so there must have been something around there.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is Mount Sanford.
So this must be east of Glen Allen or Gakona.
Yeah, well, we can look on the map here shortly and find it, yeah. Oh, there was a job and a half.
What is that?
That is a C-82 here in Fairbanks. And some fellas had bought it, a company called Carolina Aircraft. They got it and he said, get this thing going, we got to get her down here. So I commenced to work on it. It had been parked for three, four years anyhow. And let's see, got it running. Both engines, everything squared away as much best we could. Got everything working pretty good. And then we got it into Ween's hangar to do some last little bits and really thaw it out good. It was probably 30, 40 below the next morning when they pulled it out. And it took them so long to fuel it, and they didn't have heat on the engines when they started it up. It blew the nose case gears, a couple of them, up on the right engine. So it sat here in town damn near all winter. Finally fixed it the rest of the way in the spring, and they flew it out. Oh, yeah, that was a bit of a challenge. Oh, it was cold. My.
It wasn't an option to pull it back in the hangar?
Well, no, we couldn't get Ween's hangar. You know, we managed it for a couple days, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Worked on the props, desludging those a bit, and fine-tuning a bunch of whatever we could.
Is that the hangar that's still down here standing?
It's in Everett's Air now, yeah.
What year was this?
Hoo-wee. Oh, I was still teaching school at the time, doing this on the side. So... I would have to say somewhere around 69, mm-hmm. 70 maybe.
Did you bring your...
69, because the fellow that was working with me, it was the first year I taught school. And the fellow that was working with me, yeah, Dale Briggs. That's right.
Did you bring your students down and show them this thing?
Later, the next year in the spring, yeah. Yeah. You know, that would have been cruel and unusual punishment to put some kid wanting to be an AP mechanic down there at 30 below working on an airplane. It would work out too well. They would get discouraged.
What was the history of this plane?
It belonged to Al Mosley. And he got it, brought it up, and was hauling freight, carrying on. And Art had a bit, or Al had a bit of a heart problem, so they pulled his ticket, his medical. And the bank ended up owning the airplane, I think. Anyhow, things went round and round, and this Carolina Aircraft was going to take it.
What's, someone who doesn't know this aircraft at all, what's on top of it?
Oh, well, they converted, they put a jet engine up on top to give her a little more power for takeoff.
Okay.
They weren't overpowered by any means. Mm-hmm. And that was a safety factor. If you had a full load and lost an engine, you could keep going to get to a runway. Mm-hmm. That was basically what it was for.
I don't know that I've ever seen one of those.
Ooh, they flew in and out here for years with Northern Air Cargo. That's how they started up. They had two of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're still going strong and got jets now. Ah, Ween's Hangar on a cold morning.
It looks cold.
It must have been 50 below from the looks of that ice fog. Oh, yeah. And there's my boat. Heading downriver.
This was the Tanana?
Yeah. It was pretty new yet. It was still green. Yeah.
69 or so?
Yeah, probably in there. We're back to that thing again. Oh, yes. Well, that dog is... That's Judy's dog. That was a big old black German Shepherd. Nice old guy. And we're just coming into Fouts' Landing on the Chena.
Okay. Down towards the mouth?
Oh, no. It's just below where the Discovery Park's now.
Okay.
There's still a bit of a runway there, but it's been closed for years. You can see the float planes lined up. At one time, there would be float planes lined up from... Let's see, what's the name of that street? Ravenwood Street, all of which ended at the river, all the way up to Broadmoor Street, which was two blocks up. Wingtip to wingtip.
Once again, I think I have some of these slides flipped around a little bit.
Those are right, I think. This is my poor photographer. Of course, I'm taking pictures, trying to ride in the boat and do everything else.
And you got to remember, these slides are 40 years old.
That too.
They've faded some.
Oh, that's one of the racing boats going downriver.
Okay, for the Yukon 800?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, we used to go down and watch them take off.
Now I think they take off from Chena Pump Campground.
Yeah. There's too much traffic on the Chena. Mm-hmm. There I am, and there's old Spotsy. And Mangy Dog and me were together for 17 years.
Was that your daughter's dog when she was...
No, that's the one they remember when they were little, yeah. Mm-hmm. That dog didn't want them girls fussing with her. She was kind of a one-man dog. But by gosh, if somebody come around, the kids, she was right there guarding them. Mm-hmm. But she didn't want them messing with her.
Is this the dog you had in the classroom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took her over to work with me and everything else. Then she raised up down at Ween's in the hangar.
Mm-hmm. Is this the boat you bought for doing that recovery?
Yeah. It's down in the Tanana somewhere. I wonder where that was at. You know, that was probably on the Dew Line. Yeah.
If I had ultra zoom, we might be able to zoom in on who that is.
I'm pretty sure it's Jimmy Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Ween mechanic at Barrow. No, on the Dew Line airplane, in case they kept one up there that went back and forth across the line. And Jim was the mechanic and flight attendant on it. I happened to be over in Point Barrow working on the Beaver when they blew a cylinder on this airplane at Barrow. And I went out to the site and helped him change the cylinder.
Was this a Ween plane?
Oh, yeah. 769, tail number on it. Later on, I spent almost a year on that thing as a flight attendant mechanic myself.
Was that a C-46?
C-47, DC-3.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. I think it was Ween's first DC-3. There was one there, and then there was one out of Nome. Threes.
Was this the late 60s again, too, or...?
It would have been... See, I went to work at Ween's in 63, I think, and I was there till after the flood in 67.
Mm-hmm.
So there was somewhere in the aisle, 64, somewhere in there, maybe.
Yeah, I think 66 is when my dad first went to fly for Ween out of Kotzebue.
Yeah, you see, I wouldn't have met him. I never got over to Kotzebue to speak of.
Mm-hmm. But he flew up to the Dew Line in 57.
Oh, yeah, way before my time. That's when we were still working on it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good times of that were in the early 50s. That was the big money job then for the construction hands. Yeah, that's Mike Daniels. He was one of the station agents at Barrow. And that's the Beaver they kept stationed there that I'd come up and work on with Need 100 Hour.
So Wayne's colors weren't always gold?
Oh, no, no, no. These were leased airplanes, and they were this, there were two of them that color.
Are those standard tires for a Beaver?
They probably are. Probably the largest ones they could put on at the time, anyhow. Mm-hmm. Hamilton standard prop. Yeah. Oh, that's my front yard in Fairbanks with my Taylor craft sitting in it. Yeah. That was at Fairbanks Aircraft, you can see. It's a Mooney Mite that they'd overhauled there. Little one-place all-wood airplane.
And for me to have ID'd that plane, I would have had to get a book out. I've never even heard of a Mooney Mite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just one little cockpit. That's a wreck bonanza at Clear. They went takeoff, didn't make it. So, let's see, Jess Bachner, this fellow, Joe Galeotto, and myself drove down with a trailer and took it apart and loaded it up and brought it back to town.
At the air station?
Oh, no, it was a little runway near the Clear Sky Lodge.
Okay.
Yeah. Cold and dark. But we stayed at the Clear Sky Lodge and had a good time.
Once again, I keep harboring on dates, but to document this stuff, it's kind of important. Any idea on the date of that?
Oh, my. I haven't got the foggiest there. Before I went to work for Weens, when I was back from A&P school. Probably before I went in the Army. 57, maybe, 58, somewhere near. No, it was after I got out of the Army, so it had to be 61, probably 62, somewhere there.
Was the Army a voluntary service?
Oh, no, I got drafted like everybody else in those days.
Uh-huh.
Spent basic training at Fort Ord and ended up in the 3rd Infantry, Fort Myer, Virginia. The old guard. Yeah, march and parade, carry on.
Was this between Vietnam and Korea?
Yeah, I was lucky before Vietnam got going. Mm-hmm. So I got drafted, I went in 59, I got out in January, February of 61, something like that. I was glad to see that plane crash. I'd first gone to work when I got out of the Army for Lou Applegate, and that airplane was running back and forth to Clear, and it was a junker. There was always something wrong with it, and the guy didn't have enough money to fix it properly, so we kept gluing it back together, you might say. And then I went over and went back to work for Fairbanks Aircraft, and that airplane followed me.
Oh, no.
And finally, when it crashed, I told Jess, I'll be happy to junk this thing out. That's the Ween DC-3 again, at, probably at Barrow. Now we're back on the river at Pouch's Landing again. That's from the upriver side. It's a fish wheel going down on the Tanana. Yeah, Pouch's.
That's coming from the different direction on the river. I got that slide backwards.
Gee. I think that one might be backwards.
Okay.
And they're all kicked back. Both dogs, Judy in the bow, taking pictures. I had a little seat I'd built right in the stern. So I'd sit down there a bit when things were good. Spent most of your time standing up, though. But we're out in the middle of the river now, no problems.
You're looking rather regal there. Like you're really enjoying
it. One hand on the lift and one hand on the throttle. Did that for years. That was a good setup.
Did you incorporate the boat much other than pleasure? Was it incorporated into recoveries?
Oh, I used it on the B-25 job. That was the main reason for getting it. Mm-hmm. Plus the fact that then I could write it off. And it was on a couple other jobs, too. What the hell was going on there?
Maybe that's just a picture of the trees.
It might be. It might be.
I see something right here, an old...
Well, that's the front of the pickup.
Is that an old Chevy?
Yeah, yeah. 66 Chevy pickup. Had it for years. I think I drove that thing for 30 years. And that's our house, just when it was just the first part of it.
It's real difficult when you're looking at the slide with just the slide, and I don't have a slide viewer.
Mm-hmm.
See, and the first time I scanned this, it was upside down, and I had to really study it to say, oh, that's a cabin.
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
is this located at?
Broadmoor Acres. I'm still living in it. It's been added on to a couple times. But mm-hmm. Yeah, still living there.
I think that's the last slide, Jim. Yep.
Yep, that's it. All right.
You want to take a little break? I got a few questions to ask you on tape.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Ow. Ah. I need to get a little bit of biographical information. So I can't just start a book out and say, there's an airplane mechanic and he was born an airplane mechanic. So as much as you can, or if you think about what you'd like in a book, just a little bit about, you know, you were born in Fairbanks, I know that.
Oh, yeah, I was born in St. Joseph's Hospital, the old place.
Do you mind me asking what year that was?
1936. Got an older brother, he's 3 years older than me. Finally looked him up last year, a trip to the States. He lives in California. And we realized it was 38 years since the last time we'd seen each other. When her dad died, he came up for the funeral. It was a good little town then. Yeah, we see. In 39, the folks were up on Pine Creek in the Upper Chena. They sent my brother down to his grandmother, took me along. And that's where I got checked out on the cat. There's a picture somewhere of me sitting in my dad's lap working the cat, a little TD-40 or something. So you're up there for a summer.
Mining?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny how you have first memories. And there's always been this little memory of a lamp swinging around and a bird with wheels on it. And I kept trying to put that together for years, and finally I realized they'd gone up the river on a cat train with Wanigans, you know, on the sleds and everything else. And that was on the cat train. The lamp was swinging, and it was a Stan Abel gas box. And they had an eagle with wheels on it for an insignia.
Okay.
That's the first real, genuine memory I can come up with. Their dad told me, he says, oh, we got up there. And he says, the hydraulic pipe for, you know, for the giants and everything was pretty lightweight. It got kinked on the bunks on the sled. So they gave me a jack and a handle and shoved me in the pipe, which was about 3 foot across, to get in there and jack the dent up. And you know, I didn't turn three until that fall when we came back to town. I do remember the folks had brought a tricycle along for me. And I backed it into a hornet's nest. And that's a very vivid memory. Oh, boy, I didn't know what was going on. I'm just a screaming and they're a biting. One of the crew happened to come walking up and get me rescued. Mom said later they got me into the cookhouse. And she says the hornets were coming out of your clothes and they would run around and they would only come back and sting me.
Hmm.
I was a puffed up little rascal there for a while, I guess.
Your dad was a miner then?
Oh, he always wanted to. He'd mined before, but that was the last real mining he got into. Then, of course, you see the war came along, so we went to Seward. He had a job down there running their equipment shop. And Seward was fun for a little kid then. I was about 5, 6, something like that. Must have been 6, I was in the first grade, remember that. And there wasn't too many kids around because it was a war zone and they shipped everybody out unless you were Native Alaskans. Well, mm-hmm. Mom and brother and I were. She was born at Ophir. So here we go. They had machine gun emplacements on a lot of the corners. Everybody had to have a slit trench, a bomb shelter in the backyard. And poor old Mrs. Brown, she didn't want them to dig one, and they did, and then they found her husband's body. Oh, no. She buried him in the backyard. She beat his head in or something. Oh, yeah, it was kind of interesting. Every now and then we'd be at the school and they'd have a big ray, air raid signal, and we'd all get run down into the basement. And usually it was a whale or something, and of course everybody thought it was a Jap submarine. Then back to Fairbanks. Pretty normal from there on, just going to school and carrying on. It's a good town then. Well, if you didn't count the military, there might have been 6,000 people living in Fairbanks, civilians. Maybe. The town pretty well ended at the edge at Weeks Field, which was about 2 blocks from our house. So there I was up staring at airplanes all the time again. In fact, I delivered papers along Weeks Field for a couple of years. It was fun. I get to see all this stuff. My Uncle Fred had a hangar up there. He worked for Lyle and Green, taking care of, they had a regular Air Force, taking care of their stuff. Yeah, it was a good place to grow up in.
Your Uncle Fred, what was his last name?
Oh, Fred Seltenrich.
Okay.
Yeah, he came originally from McCarthy, he and his brothers. All of them in aviation. One of them got killed in a Pan American crash, I think at Barrow or Nome. Barrow, I guess it was. And Bud, he had a flying school here in town until a big wind rolled everything up in a ball. I saw a picture once. It must have been four or five Taylor crafts all wrapped up together. Big wind on an Easter Sunday, and that's the year we happened to be outside visiting my grandparents.
Is Bud your uncle?
Yeah, they're all passed away now.
Is this Fred's brother?
Fred's brother, Bud, yeah. He worked for the FAA for years and years.
Is this your mom's brother?
My mom's sister, Helen, married Fred.
Okay.
So we went along that way.
And yeah, there's some archival stuff on Bud Seltenrich.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an airplane mechanic or a pilot?
Started off as a mechanic, yeah, and he flew too, of course, but not. I don't think he flew commercial. Yeah, really, I didn't realize until years later that he'd actually got started working for Harold Gillum down at Glen Allen, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere down there, McCarthy one. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, high school and all that good stuff. Old main school on Cushman Street. Started off in the basement in kindergarten. It's in Seward to the first grade and part of the second. From then on, I was in Old Main until graduated.
You're how many brothers? You just have the one brother?
That's all, just the one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your kids, you have Lillian?
Oh, there's Jenny, Lily, and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they're still here in town, working away. Everything's going fine for them. Elizabeth's outside now. Her husband's getting squared away for a surveyor's ticket. Lily's working at the university. Jenny, bless her heart, is retarded, and she's in her early 40s now.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to keep an eye on her a bit, too. But she's doing pretty well.
So Fairbanks, and I guess you were in your elementary school in the 30s and 40s?
40s.
40s, okay.
Yeah, I think it was 1942 when we were in Seward.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see, yeah, I'd have been 6 years old, because I know I went to the first grade there.
Fairbanks had to have been a different place. It all pretty much changed about pipeline time, huh?
Oh, well, first change was when they built Eielson. They had a lot of troops at what was Ladd Field then, Fort Wayne right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of boomed it up. And then it was generally military construction, and the university was building a little bit. Things just slowly kept growing and growing. The pipeline was the big boom, of course. The Dew Line, there was quite a bit of growth right there, because there was a lot of guys going through to go up and work on that. That would have been early 50s. I think it was still going on about 54 when I got out of high school, because I remember South Fairbanks was not part of the city. No, it had been earlier, about 52. And the bars were open 24 hours a day. Didn't matter when you did anything, you could hear music playing somewhere.
When did you establish this hangar here?
Well, this came way late. I didn't get moved in here until 93.
Okay.
Prior to that, I worked out of a small shop down on Ravenwood Street that was close to Fouts' Landing. I bought the property in 1980, and then about that time I got a divorce. So I got drunk for a couple of years, then got squared away and settled down, and saved up a bunch of money and started building this place. Mm-hmm. Actually, Hutch built this part. That part was my original shop, but it was shorter. And the gray building out here we used for parts was the other part of it. Mm-hmm. So people could land at Fouts' Runway and taxi up the road to my yard and work on the airplanes. Mm-hmm. Carried on.
Did you have a hangar on?
No. It was just this small building, 24 wide, about 32 deep.
Did you just work on the planes out in the driveway then? Or?
Oh, in the summer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What did you do in the wintertime?
Rebuild. And then came the pipeline. And there wasn't nobody flying airplanes or doing anything. And I had some Herman Nelson heaters I had resurrected, because I would work on Northern Air Cargo C-82s when it came through, or heat them up or whatever it took to do. But that was pretty, that wasn't too steady work either. And then I ran into a truck dispatcher for one of the truck lines one afternoon. I was having a beer and talking. He says, "Hey, you still got Herman Nelsons?" I said, "Sure, a couple of them." It was just what they needed, because it was cold, and it was stateside drivers, and they would turn their rigs off, and they would freeze up. So I spent the rest of that winter basically thawing out trucks and heavy equipment and fixing Herman Nelson heaters. But it got me through the winter, a couple of years of that. Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind, just so I can develop a timeline as much as possible, and I know you've already done a lot of it, but could you kind of just, from when you got started on airplanes, talk about each progression and who you worked for? And so you started out working for Jess Bochner.
Actually, somewhere back here, I've got a resume. I'll go dig that out.
Okay.
I maybe can find it.
Some of these are kind of strange, but
we'll get that. Welder isn't right. I did most everything in the little house shop.
This looks like a typewriter written resume. It looks like a typewriter versus computer generated.
I don't know where I got this one. Yeah, the engine overhaul shop, that was mostly cleaning parts. Now you see, it's like this one. I was going to school, but they had a deal going. Western Airlines had lost a bunch of mechanics due to strike, so they were hiring students that were within 3 months of getting their tickets. Mm-hmm. So from November to there, you see they overlap. '59 to '61 military. Yeah, that didn't last long. Lose. I don't even think it went to November. Oh, well. Back to Vermeer, then I went to '67. It's when I bought into the B-25s, owner and maintenance chief. Yes, that's me. Sounds good, doesn't it? Now, June of 68 to November of 62, the power plant instructor, I was also working on the B-25s.
Was, when you were working for the AMP program, was that for the university?
At that time, it was the North Star Borough School of Aviation.
Hmm. Who was it owned by?
Was it? The borough actually ran it.
It was the borough?
And it was under the... Yeah, the borough had a program. That's when they got a bunch of vocational education programs going. Mm-hmm. Now, the A&P school started about a year or so ahead of this, and I wandered in and I got a job with them, part-time at first, then full-time. And that would have been, when, 68, yeah.
Was it related to the university's program?
Yeah, the university took it over when... after I left. And they might have been at Metro another year or so, and then they were at Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. So moved in there. But right about that time, and I couldn't tell you the word, because, you know, I went to work at, what, 68? Mm-hmm. Or something. Anyhow, there had been a class before that, but it also started up some of the mechanic school and a bunch of the other things. Then they combined them all, and they built Hutchinson Center. And the university had it then, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure.
Did you keep up with the history of that program at all?
Now and then I'll...
Didn't they lose some instructors in crashes there for some years?
No.
That was just a rumor.
Only one. Okay. Only one. I didn't know him too well. His last name was Barry, if I remember correctly. And he was the only one that got killed in a plane crash. He'd lent his plane to somebody else, and they crashed and got killed up on Lion's Peak. And the Park Service got after him to get the wreckage out of there. So he and a fellow named Fritz flew up in Fritz's plane, and the wind got them, and they both got killed. Mm. But other than that, it was just a normal change, I would say. I was there. I was working pretty much with a guy named Bob Richardson. In fact, I'm the one that talked Bob into going to work there. And he stayed long after I'd left. In fact, he was over at Hutch for quite a while. Finally retired. Yeah, because he's out in the States now. And I don't know when Arvid came on board, but it wasn't too much longer after that, after Barry got killed. I don't know any... Arvid Weflin, he's retired too.
Do you have a job or a period of time that you remember especially fondly as far as your working career goes? Was working at Ween a good hitch? Or
The new line was a good hitch. Mm-hmm. See, that was about a year. But I had started building this house, and between one thing and another, Ween's pay wasn't too high. Got pretty well in debt. And they sent me to the PT6 school out in Hartford, Connecticut. And they said, you are going to go to Kotzebue and take care of the porters. And I says, I am not going to go to Kotzebue because I got a house here in town and I don't need to go rent a house in Kotzebue. So they offered me the dew line. And I don't really understand the mechanics at all, but I think they wanted me out of town. The overhead had changed. And they just, I don't know what was going on there, but prior to that, I'd been working in the... doing the dope and fabric and some of the upholstery. That little shop out back of the hangar. That was a good setup. Anyhow, so I went to the dew line was probably, that was a good time. And free room and board, plenty to keep you busy.
Part of your upholstery job at some point was making a little seat for Doug Millard.
Oh, yeah. Doug's pretty short, so he... came in one day and he was talking about his problem with the C-46 and how he was always sitting on the edge of the seat. So he figured it out and I made him a longer one that would fit in there and he could put some pillows behind him and still his legs were supported. Yeah, Doug's good people.
Yeah, I think I was telling you that I'm going to Anchorage over Thanksgiving. Spend it with my stepmom. It'll be her first holiday without dad.
Ah.
And all my brothers are going to be up north. but I'm gonna, she has to work two of those days, and on the 26th, Doug is gonna come in and spend a day.
Okay, that's good. Stories. That's good. Yeah, that's a good deal.
But,
yeah, Doug said once, he says, I have been flying the same airplanes for 20 years. I said, well, Jesus, Doug, you're plenty qualified. Why don't you move on to some bigger outfit? He says, I can't. I'm too short. And that was about it. He was a pretty small guy.
Doug's flown me many times back and forth out to the homestead at One Stone.
Oh, I'll bet, yeah.
Good pilot.
He is, yeah. Yeah.
Another guy I didn't realize that, I tell you the truth, I didn't even realize Jorgie was still alive.
Oh, he's over here every Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Him and Al Wright. Yeah.
Your dad worked as a cat skinner.
Oh, yeah.
Was he mining in Kantishna? There's that story that he was out there when, I think it was Jess Bachner, when his teeth got melted.
I think actually, well, you know, you see, he trapped, and then he met Mom, and then he worked in some of the mines around down that part of the country at Ferry and Healy, whatever. And he was hauling antimony ore from Stampede Mine, I suppose up to a railroad connection somewhere, with a cat and a sled. And see, I know he worked, when he first got here, somewhere along the line, he worked on the Davison Ditch. He was driving cat there, the old 60-horse gas cats, which they used mainly for transporting stuff across country. They didn't have any blades or anything on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he and Mom got married in 32. He was working for the FE company then. As they got married out at the FE camp, which is still there.
The one out at Chattanooga?
The one at Chattanooga.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, during the war, then he must have been working with the FE company when I was small, except one deal up at Pine Creek.
What kind of a mine was it at Pine Creek? Was it a shaft mine?
No, plaster. Plaster, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, he was in Seward. He was head of the shop there, came back, worked for the Corps Engineers in Fairbanks, running heavy equipment. And then he bought a surplus cat and went to clearing ground for all the homesteaders we had around here then. So he cleared ground on Farmer's Loop and Badger Road, all over. A D8 cat and the operator, $20 an hour.
That was probably good money.
Oh, we thought it was a fortune, you know. Of course, most of it ended up going right back into keeping the cat running. Let's see. And then later on, he shifted out of cats and went to well drilling. He'd work on the drill crews for the FE company, so he bought this Bucyrus 20W, mounted on a truck, and away he went. Water wells, yeah. He drilled wells around here for ages. And yeah, he's up in his 60s. There was a, I guess it would have been a guy married to his niece, working for Burgess. They're up at Point Barrow, and the crane operator tipped the crane over. And all these years, Dad had kept in 302, just as kind of, you know, there, but he wasn't working through the union. But he had his cards. So he got hold of him and said, would you come up and run the crane up here at Barrow? Sounded like a good deal. So away he went. And his next remark, when I picked him up and take him back to town, he says, Jesus, this working for these guys is a lot easier than working for yourself. So he went at that for 3-4 years. Finally kind of retired. Died when he was 68. Heart attack.
Come on.
Just before him and Mom had been married for 40 years.
Is it your...
Maybe they did have their 40th anniversary. I took them down river to boat to go fishing.
It must be your... Is it... Who's Lily doing her master's thesis on? Is it your mom?
No, my mother's dad, John Reek.
Okay.
Yeah.
She actually defends her thesis Thursday at 3.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking I'm going to get out of bed early, and so she has an audience.
That, yeah, I hope she makes
she
it.
She told me not to, but I think I will anyway.
Well, she said she had it up once, and she said she just didn't really think it was right, and this and that, and then she found out that the people that were judging her, they hadn't read it or anything.
Yeah,
she's totally a little discouraged about that. She says, I probably could have sailed right through. Now, she's still looking for a picture of her granddad, it would have been. It's a coffee shop at the head of Chilkoot Pass.
Yeah.
That was a story I never heard. I never knew my grandpa too well. We stayed with him for about 6 months.
He lived in the States? Or?
Yeah, they were living in Vashon Island at the time. They closed down all the mining when the war started.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came in from Takotna. There wasn't much to do down there. Everything shut down. They were running the roadhouse at the time, and Grandma was the postmaster. So the Reeks Roadhouse. So they came in and went out and bought this place in Vashon Island. Stayed there. We went out and stayed with them. Yeah, I'd say it was about 10. Yeah, because it was right after the war. We drove over the highway in 46.
Did you say Rika's Roadhouse? Or?
No, Reeks, R-E-I-C-K.
Where was that at?
That was at Takotna.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a picture of home of them. Grandma and Grandpa sitting on the porch.
So that makes you third generation Alaskan.
No, I'm second. Lily's third.
Lily's third, okay.
Yeah. Damn that cat here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Granddad, his knees were shot. Boy, he was a tough old guy. He'd be out working that garden in Fashion Island on his knees with pads on his knees.
Where's the island at?
Oh, Puget Sound. Puget Sound,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't much there then. I guess it's a regular bedroom community of Seattle now.
Yeah.
I'd like to go out and take a look at it someday.
Well, Jim, we have an hour and 20 minutes of recording today. You want to call it good for today?
That's good enough for today, yeah.
It'll be better when I get the next 100 slides on there.
Oh, yeah, that's good for a lot of conversation. Well, what about the regular photos, though? Banks Aircraft Service.
Okay, so let me ask the question into the mic. I wanted to get your take, your history, not necessarily just with, but what you know about Fairbanks Aircraft Service and the people involved.
Well, Fairbanks Aircraft started up, it was still on Weeks Field. And my Uncle Fred was mixed up in it. It was Fairbanks Aircraft and Fairbanks Air Service. Holly Evans broke off with Fairbanks Air Service. Then they were starting to close up Weeks Field. So Fred and there was a couple other partners. I think Jess might have been a partner in it then. And Gordy Mitchell. Three or four people. Dennis, Dave Phillips was one of them. They got the hangar built on Phillips Field.
Named after Dave Phillips?
No, Phillips Field was... There's an old boy, Carol Phillips, had a homestead over there.
Okay.
And he says, oh, okay, we'll put in a runway for you guys. Anyhow, they all got together and got this done. And so the hangar went up, and everything was operating out of there. And then Holly built another hangar down the runway and moved down there. Dave Phillips sold out to Gordy Mitchell. See, Fred had already sold out, I guess. But Dave sold out to Gordy Mitchell and Jess. And then later on, Jess bought out Gordy. So he had the thing himself. And you know, I can't tell you which year that was. Andy Bachner would probably know. Maybe.
I think, actually, they talk about on those videotapes that are on Project Jukebox Online, I think Jess Bachner talks about the establishment of it some, too.
Yeah.
Most of the dates on there. There was something there about they had to get... They're building Fairbanks International at the same time
uh-huh.
they get a flight in.
They get a picture on the wall of one of Holly's airplanes taking off, and the runway was in use before International got finished because the patterns did intersect a bit. And they were supposed to keep above so high above Phillips when they came through, and I can remember dark and foggy days, and the 46 would loom out of this fog and pretty low, but we all expected it. Nobody thought much about it. See, I don't think there was any mid-airs or anything else caused by it.
Was there a plane that crashed right behind, in between U Park, old U Park School and Hutch?
Yeah, that was a DC-6 of Pacific Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And they took off, and As it would happen, I was due to go to Kotzebue the next morning, or Galena or someplace. And the wife and I had gone over to the hotel to have a couple beers and relax, and a babysitter. And this airplane went overhead, and the fellow attending bar had flown a bit too, and he says, sit there. I said, that don't sound right. He says, no, it don't. So we went out, we're looking out the windows, and we could see the lights on the six. It was just coming down. You know, I never did go over to look at where it crashed at. But one guy survived. I think the flight engineer, I'm not sure. But it turned out that they had been fueled up and they got diesel in it. Or, well, jet fuel. Mm-hmm. There'd been a mistake made somewhere. But yeah, we actually saw it settling.
Do you remember what year that was? Because I have this obscure memory in my mind of being a kid in about 1970 and going and looking at...
No, it would have been later than that.
Yeah, I'm not
I
sure
think,
when that
yeah.
was. I think I remember seeing that.
Because I wasn't teaching school, so it had been up in the... Seeing this before I got divorced, so it had to be mid-70s, mm-hmm. somewhere in there.
See, I went through a... You parked until 1976 or somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I might have gone out as a kid and looked at that when I
probably did. Yeah.
Sixth grade.
Yeah. Ooh.
So Jess Bachner, was he the main game in town when you got started in airplanes?
Well, they had their own place over there, and there was a couple of guys working out of International. I think actually, let's see. Well, Hutch had a hangar at International for a while, had his own business, Hutch's Aircraft. There was another guy, Bill something, in the 60s. That was at International. But Northland Aviation didn't get going until mid-60s. Got a hangar up. I think basically that... Bachner had about the only hangar going for small aircraft at the time.
Wakesfield, it was right where the library sits?
The library sits on part of it, yeah. It started at Gillum Way and went basically to the river. I mean, they take planes down on a trailer, put them in the water at the end of the runway.
Oh, so it went north-south, the runway did?
I think so. Yeah.
I always envisioned it going east-west.
No, I don't think so. Fairview Manor got built on the edge of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we took a drive. I could show you pretty much where it was. See, seemed like... trying to remember which street would have been behind it. They kind of curved around in there. Maybe it would have been 10th. 9th to 8th was in the 9th, kind of hooked and round, and that curved, and there was a 10th. That went down along the runway, and then 9th hooked into that. The 10th kind of disappeared there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And right at the head of Barnett Street, there was a flying school there on the runway. And an engine overhaul shop. All kinds of things are going on. Gillum's hangar was across the runway, about where the Boy Scout building is now.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Pan American Hangar was on the edge of the runway, and that's the bowling alley. So if you can figure it out from there, you'd have it pretty well plumbed in.
And Wakesfield had been around for years.
Oh, yeah. In fact, what I understood, there was quite a fight when they closed it up because there was no reason they couldn't, you know, Anchorage had a runway right in town. Why couldn't have one here?
Mm-hmm.
But the city fathers got to figuring out, and it was kind of a land grab when it got done. It was originally part of the Weeks Homestead. That's how it got started. That's where the property came from. And from what I was told, if it wasn't used for a runway, it was supposed to be a park. Well, they only made the one small park where the library is, and that one little area up there. And the rest of it got developed. You go to fly in Anchorage, you see that long green strip. That was the original Anchorage Municipal Airport.
Really?
And it's got schools and stuff on it, but that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what this was supposed to be.
I always thought the original airport in Anchorage was, what's the field right there?
Merrill? Oh, no, yeah. Merrill was the second one.
Okay.
It was on the outskirts. But you fly into Anchorage, you know, you can see that long green strip there, kind of, where there's buildings on it now. But
and it's called the Park Strip now, I think.
I think so, something like that, yeah. That was originally the Anchorage Initial Airport.
Okay.
And they should have done the same thing here with greed, who knows.
Mm-hmm. Anything else about Jess Bochner and his company?
No. Jess was real good to me about that. I came and went. Always went back to work for him. So I guess on and off, I probably worked for him 6-7 years, or chunks thereof. Well, you know, I got out of service and went back to work. I went to work for Lou, and then I went back to work for Jess. Then I went outside. There's a couple winters outside, I think. I'm not sure.
Did you work outside?
Oh, yeah. Burns Aero Seat Company.
Okay.
1 year, anyhow. Yeah, I guess that was it. Yeah, it's an interesting job. I had drove out there. I'm going to hell with it. I'm going back to the States. You know, restless shit. And I goes over to the employment service after a week or two and got squared away and got a place to live. Told this fella, I says, I want to get a job that's 5 days a week, preferably indoors. This and that. And he said, look at me, and he said, you're pretty particular for a guy looking for a job. And I said, well, I'm not actually in a hurry to go to work either, and I have never gotten unemployment my whole life. And he says, no problem here. Alaska's going to pay for it. I said, okay, this is good. Then we chatted away for a while. And I went back in 3-4 days later to see him, and he's sitting there, and he's got a big grin on his face. And I was, oh, no. And he says, yep, got just what you're looking for. Yeah, I was up North Hollywood. It wasn't too far from where I was living. So I built aircraft seats for a winter. Yeah, it was interesting. I never ran around people like that. All these other guys, every check was already spent in the finance companies. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out how they could live like that. But I kind of planned on staying out there. It was a good job. Paid good. It was a good time. I'm driving to work one morning, and it's a clear day for the first time in months, and I'm looking over these hills, and I said, what the hell am I doing here? I went and told the foreman, I said, Jesse, I got to leave. The birch trees are turning green up north. I knew this was going to happen. He says, I don't want you to leave at all. But, I says, I got to go. And I went back, getting my tools squared away, dragging my stuff up. I guess I worked another week in little notice. And old Jesse, he says, Jesse James was his name. Nice guy. He says, I wish you hadn't said that about those birch trees. He says, I originally come from North Dakota, and that's all I've been thinking about for a week. Because there, nothing changed. Mm-hmm. Everything was green all the time. Now, here's a funny one for you. When I was going to Northrop, I was living in this boarding house, and there was, four or five other students living there. And we're sitting out on the lawn, warm, hot night, you know, darker than hell. And I made a remark. I says, you know, it's kind of odd. But if it was this warm at home, it would be daylight. They're looking at me like I was nuts. I says, no, you know, the midnight sun, it's summertime. I says, here it is 8 o'clock, it's darker than hell. There would be light until midnight. You know, a couple hours, it isn't even dusk. The sun just barely goes down and comes up again. Luckily, one of those guys had made a trip up here with his folks when he was younger. And he said, no, he's right. We got there in the middle of June, and it was daylight all night long. We couldn't hardly sleep. It's funny you never think of it.
Yeah.
I confused people in the Army when they were talking about water. I said, you mean thawed ice? Huh? Well, that's the way I look at it. It's ice. Summertime, it's thawed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right out of high school, I brought my girlfriend out to Wyoming to my grandparents' ranch, and she'd never been out of Alaska in mm-hmm. her whole life. And she said, I never thought I'd go on a dark walk in the summertime where it's warm enough to walk in your t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I worked out there every summer in the hayfields for my grandpa, so I was used to it, and I had to think about that for a second. I was like, wow, yeah.
Here's one for you now. When I was on the dew line, I was up there for about 3 months. And, you know, it's winter. And it's miserable. And it was coming into spring here in town. Well, anyhow, I managed to finagle some time off because I had to take care of some paperwork and stuff. So you had somebody come up to replace me, and I'd have 3 days, I'd go back up again. Okay, that's all right. I think I came in on a Thursday, went back up on a Monday or something. Anyhow, I'm on the 46, and I am in my grubby coveralls, and had a pair of surplus mucklucks on, and my parkie with me. And they opened the door to play, and I'm standing on some, Jesus Christ, I forgot about trees. That quick.
Wow.
Because there wasn't a tree, nothing. It was just blowing snow. And never, you know, I hadn't even thought about it. Mm. But I could see you got some young kid from Barrow or something like that, or Barter, and ship him into Fairbanks to go to university. It'd be quite a shock. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that was strange, just that short length of time, and I forgot about trees.
First time I went to Prudhoe, I couldn't figure out why they couldn't build a straight road. It was the middle of winter, and I can't see very good in the dark, and it's dark all the time, and the roads are all windy. And
yeah.
And then I made it, stayed up there from like October until April or May, and finally when it started thawing, I was like, oh, there's lakes everywhere.
Yeah.
That's why they can't build a straight road.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, indeed. Of course, when I was up there was nothing there, just the dew line sites, and occasionally, once we must have been at Barter for a couple of days, and we're heading west, heading for Barrow, wheeling along, all of a sudden, what in the hell is this? Well, here was this cat train. You could see the tracks. They'd unloaded at a Licktock, and we're heading off across country. We had to follow, turn and follow. The guys were in our country by that cat train at about 50 feet in the dug. Just fun.
Yeah, Licktock's where my dad went to work on the dew line.
Mm.
And that's where, I don't know how many years later it was, about 30 years later, I was working for Houston up there as a mechanic, and I was out at Licktock Station.
Yeah. Let's see. It was Bar 4. That was off to the east of us. Then Barter was actually our main base. And then it was Flaxman, Licktock, Lonely, and Barrow, and Wainwright, and Point Lay. So we covered all of that.
Did you pretty much just travel with the plane?
Oh, I was on all the time. I was the flight attendant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the mechanic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Worked out pretty good. Only once did I get a little nervous. They loaded on an Eskimo gal at Barter. Was she pregnant? I remember telling the pilot, I says, hey, Smitty, don't make any hard landings this time. I don't know if I can handle this. Even though I'd gone to stewardess school and was supposedly checked out of delivering babies, I didn't really want to get into this. And I got her over to Barrow, and I guess she had the kid about 2 days later, something like that.
You didn't happen to ever run across John Cross in your travels, did you?
I met him slightly over Cottsview years later. That's basically where he lived and flew out of. And he's pretty old. He quit flying by then.
That's my stepmom's dad.
Oh, be darned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she probably knew Buck then.
Oh, yeah. So my dad flew for Buck a little bit.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Buck, Mac.
Maxon Aviation.
Yeah, Maxon. Yeah.
And Twin Beaches and the Otter and 185s, Malls. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, a bunch of stuff he had through the years.
Now, there's a, I forget her name, I'm trying to think of the lady up there who has a flying service.
I'm Marge sure. Baker.
Yeah, Marge Baker.
Yeah, Baker Aviation, yeah.
Yeah, because when we first came to Alaska, Dad's first job was out of Kotzebue, and we all lived up there.
Ah.
And I always thought to myself, I wonder what it was like for my mom, a girl out of Bighorn, Wyoming, never been anywhere to get shipped straight to
Kotzebue.
It must have been a culture shock.
Must have been a bastard, yeah. Honey buckets, oh boy. Yeah, there wasn't an indoor plumbing back then either. 60s. Let's see. Yeah, because I was up there for Weens once, I think, was all. Went up to help out a little bit.
In fact, in Jorgie's book, have you read Jorgie's book?
No.
He talks about his last flight was, his plane was out at Minto, and his eyes had gone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he needed to get his plane back to Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And it was actually Sue's brother, Milton, who had some sort of emotional breakdown when they were flying in and said they couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And flew back.
And Jorgie flew in with his eyes as bad as they were. Blind
using
as a bat.
Scopes on his gauges.
Blind as a bat, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he told a story one day.
Would it be out of line for me to, you said Wednesday mornings is when Jorgie's down here?
Yeah, but it's kind of hard to get him to talk.
I wasn't actually thinking of recording him. I was wondering, would it be a problem if I just came down and was a little mouse in the corner?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no problem at all. They usually show up about 9 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And some days, of course, Jorgie ain't here. It's, you know, he's healthy and all that good.
You just kind of have a little unorganized meeting.
We just stop and have coffee and get them talking. Yeah. That's great. Well, they have a regular round. Ted drives them around. There's Al and Jorgie, and they come here, and then they stop up to Runway, and they see O'Neill. And they go over and see Todd McDonald at Metro. And see, Hangar 1 closed down, so I don't know where else they go.
Who's Al? Is that his son?
Al Wright.
Al Wright, okay.
Old man, flew up here for centuries. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He started off in the 40s flying a T-craft out of Lenana Air Service. $15 one way, $25 round trip. Hard to think of it. It's like Weens, though. There's a picture of Bill English standing on floats with Cessna 120 or 140, hauling mail up and down out of Bettles, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, he was raised up in Wiseman, where he was born.
Is Bill English part native?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I've heard the name for years.
Oh, what a guy. Straight arrow, no booze. Yeah. There was two of the top pilots for Wayne's were Bill English and Tommy Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Part native guys.
Yeah.
And then there were several others in Bush and everything. And Benny Ulan, who came from Wiseman originally, he was co-pilot on this DC-3 I was on. And then he went on, I think he was co-pilot or captain on the jet when he died. Pretty young yet, too. Went home to watch the football game, died in his rocking chair. Recliner.
I don't remember who it was, but one Christmas I think I was going up to Barrow to see my sister who was living up there, and the plane broke down, and we were sitting in the plane, and it was like Christmas Eve, and we couldn't go anywhere, and we couldn't get off the plane for some reason. And some wing pilot, and my dad's told me the story about who it was, but got on the intercom with a harmonica.
George Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, George Clayton. He would play that harmonica and carry on. Only had one tune, but he had a lot of songs for it. It's quite a character.
And George Clayton, there's the rental coordinator or parts foreman, Bill, not Walker, he works for Airport Rentals. He rebuilds old cars, and he got all George Clayton's Model A's and Model T's down here. I was down there talking to him one day, my brother-in-law.
Well, I know there's a Model A club here in town. And George made sure they got all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking about the one pilot.
Dean.
Where was it now? My brother-in-law knows his kids. Not Donaldson. I got it on tape here.
Evening, Dean.
I'll go ahead and shut down the recorder now, Jim.
Whipping up my biography here.
Yeah.
You're getting with the program.
All right.
Really, my name's Andy Anderson.
Yeah, Dean Zulsdorf.
Huh.